I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome today. I want to make a couple of quick announcements before we start. In the news today, Charles Buckley, one of the leading conservative thinkers in America, came out for Barack Obama and was promptly kicked off the National Review and National Journal. And a piece we'll talk about a little bit later, but I wanted to throw that news out to you all and to let you all know that tomorrow night, during the debate at the Charles Theater, they're having a special showing of the debate live. So if you get down there early enough, you'll have a seat, a lot of other folks, enjoy the popcorn and the company, and be able to watch the debate in the comfort of the Charles Theater tomorrow night. So I encourage you all to do that. We're going to try to make it down there ourselves. And today, we have a number of interesting guests, starting off with Lenny McAllister, who writes for The Root, AOL Black Voices, Hip Hop Republican, and as political contributor for the Fox Charlotte Morning Show, Fox News Rising, was featured in the New York Times, causing a great deal of controversy, as any serious thinkers who are black Republicans do. And Lenny McAllister, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon. How are you doing today?
I'm well. Welcome. Good to have you with us. And folks, join us here at 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888, or write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. To join us for this first part of our program is to talk with Lenny McAllister and move on to several interesting guests as well. Not that Lenny is not. Lenny is a really interesting guest. So, Lenny, let me talk a bit about I looked at your, I was reading a lot of your stuff, and it seems that people who are both African-American and Republican, even the former lieutenant governor of the state of Maryland, often seem to be vilified by a lot of folks in the black community, and or it seems either put up as a showcase by Republicans or marginalized. Is that fair or unfair description is what happens?
I think that is what we're looking at now with the Barack Obama nomination and moving forward with the 2008 election is that is a past pattern, if you will, and now we're looking at a new mold of what black republicanism will be. I think it's one of the interesting things about hip-hop republicanism. It's the fact that we're not looking to fit into the GOP. We're going to the GOP and saying, you must change if you want to be a relevant party in the 21st century. And subsequently, there's not the willingness or the need to reflect every single line that is the typical Republican line. I mean, there are certain instances, for example, within hip-hop republicanism that espouses the need for additional affirmative action initiatives, maybe not necessarily monetary investment, but initiatives and resource investment just the same in order to help African-American, and in particular African-American male youth, get ahead. So I think there's an opportunity here to break away from that past mold of what black republicanism used to be and what it's going to be moving forward. And you know, black Republicans can thank Barack Obama for that, believe it or not.
I think that's true. That makes sense. But I wonder if you could describe for us and define for us what hip-hop Republican means. I mean, people often talk about hip-hop politics, the hip-hop Congress, they were bloggers at the Democratic Convention who represented the hip-hop point of view in a very broad spectrum. So what does it mean to be a hip-hop Republican?
A hip-hop Republican is a young urban Republican, generally between the ages of 20 and 45, those that grew up with the initial and subsequent stages of the hip-hop generation of music, that understand that conservative and traditional Republican values are the best methods to apply to urban issues in order to get the results that we need to turn around some of the crises that we are seeing in urban America.
Now, you know, when I watched the Republican convention, and I was very close observer of both conventions, one of the things that struck me is that anybody you saw who was African-American or even non-white at the Republican convention, you saw literally dozens of times during the evening each person because there were so few. And we made a joke that if you were a Republican and wanted to be seen on television, go stand next to a black person. Then you'll be seen on the tube. And the Republican convention itself, even demographically, was made up of mostly wealthy white men. And you've seen today Charles Buckley kind of leaving the fold in a sense, and he's even said that one of his closing comments was in an interview after being dismissed from the magazine was that I didn't leave the Republican Party. The Republican Party left me. So I wonder where you think that fits in for you and other young African-American Republicans in that context.
Well, in regards to, you covered several different things.
I did. I'm sorry, but I did.
No, that's all well and good. That's more entertaining for the view, for the listeners. In regards to the convention in Minnesota, one of the things that I found stock in was, although there were not as many people there in numbers as you would like to have, and you have to understand there's going to be a good amount of black Republicans that are going to vote for Barack Obama based on his historic nomination.
Right.
You can't necessarily fault him for that, especially older African Americans that were the people, especially here in North Carolina, that sat at the Woolworth in Greensboro, that integrated the schools here in Charlotte-Mecklenburg, the school district down here. So they're going to vote for Barack Obama, and therefore they're not going to spend that money to go to that convention, especially in an economic crisis, turbulent time that we're having right now. But with that said, those that I knew that were there, especially those here in North Carolina, they're groundbreaking individuals. So as I mentioned on several other interviews, what you look at is not necessarily 2008 when it comes to black Republicanism and hip-hop Republicanism, which is not just black, but that's all races of younger Republicans, in particular urban Republicans. But you have to look at 2012. Look at that next national convention. That's where the proof is going to be in the pudding. Now, as you move forward, when you start talking about African-Americans that happen to be Republican, the bottom line is this. We need, as black people, more political diversity. So although the Republican Party can leave us, it is up to us, just like it was up to civil rights leaders in the 20th century, to bring America back to where it needs to be. In this instance, we need to bring black America to a point of political diversity. There are black Americans and a huge number of black Americans that identify with the Republican Party when it comes to specific issues, such as abortion, such as family, such as education, even things such as school vouchers, when they understand that the competition of choice behind the concept of school vouchers, they're for those things, but they cannot get past the vilification of the Republican Party based on George W. Bush or the election in 2000 or the Willie Horton ad from 1988 with another Bush, by the way, or any of those other instances. And it's up to trailblazers to tear down those barriers and say, look, Republican values are values you already have, and they're greater than any one man or one woman's actions as a candidate. That will allow black America to strengthen itself politically so that when you start getting to 2012, 2016, 2020, we are no longer sitting there saying we've had one African-American candidate on the presidential ticket. It's not even a big deal. It's almost like the analogy of black quarterbacks. I grew up in the 1970s. And my favorite player in the NFL was Doug Williams because he was a prominent black quarterback.
Right.
My favorite team was the Pittsburgh Steelers. They almost played against each other in the Super Bowl, and I would have had one heck of a dilemma as an 8-year-old if they did. But now take me as a 36-year-old man, and I'm not going to root for just a black quarterback. I'm going to root for my Steelers because black quarterbacks are now accepted. That's what we want within the political arena as well moving forward from here.
We're talking with Lenny McAllister right now at 410-319-8888. Join us with your thoughts. He writes for Root, AOL Black Voices, hip-hop Republican. He's a political contributor to Fox Charlotte Morning Show, Fox News Rising, 410-319-8888, to talk with Lenny McAllister in this portion of our show. But a couple of things here that I kind of like to, I think it's important to throw out in terms of what you were saying. I mean, first, when you look at the last several days, the last week, with some of the comments that have been made by Sarah Palin, vice presidential candidate for the Republican Party, and you looked at the crowds around Sarah Palin and even around Senator McCain, and you heard, I mean, I looked at those crowds, and, I mean, I saw kind of the root in America being unleashed of old racist mobs, of brown shirts in Germany, of people screaming for Obama's head, the N-word being yelled out of the crowd, and this is being stoked by the woman you support as an African-American man in our country, support for Vice President of the United States. She didn't say to that crowd, don't do that. She didn't stop the crowd. She let it go.
That was disappointing.
Disappointing?
That's an understated word. And that, let me continue on. That's
I'm
one
sorry,
of
go ahead.
That people, that's one of the things that people don't understand about black Republicans. Again, they feel as though we agree with every single thing the Republican Party
No,
has
no, no,
done.
No. I would never think that.
And for example, there was an editorial that I had done on Fox News Rising a couple Mondays ago, that was soundly, and I mean soundly, criticizing Governor Palin and basically calling her two-faced. Because the Governor Palin you saw at the National Convention has not been the Governor Palin that we have seen since the National Convention, from her interviews with Katie Couric and Charlie Gibson all the way through to, and I even noted it in the editorial about how you see these chants and she just kind of sits there. A true leader does more along the lines of what John McCain did, which is like, wait a minute, this is a decent guy. I just disagree with him on some policies. He's not going to burn down your houses. He's not going to take all your homes, and he's not going to make us all communists. You know, she did none of those things. And, yeah, it is troubling for a vice presidential candidate that's supposed to be a leader and a reformer and somebody that is from a younger generation at 44 years old not to stand up the way a true leader should. Now, the more disappointing thing from an American standpoint is we are seeing ageism in this election because everybody has John McCain in the coffin. We're seeing sexism because we're hearing things such as Caribou Barbie in referring to Sarah Palin. And we are definitely seeing racism because anytime somebody says the word terrorist and Obama, they are trying to play off of a Muslim-sounding name and trying to incite certain images.
But nobody officially inside the Democratic Party is doing that. That may be happening in some blogs and presses, but, I mean, that it seems like the attacks are really... I mean, when Sarah Palin gets up there and says, Barack Hussein Obama, I mean...
And even more damaging is when she says, this is a man that does not see America the way we see America.
So how do you feel, though? I mean, you're a passionate human being who believes in a certain view of America, but then you see that, I mean, it must send hackles up your back.
That's why you have to speak out, and it gives more credibility to say, look, I am still a Republican, I still hold my Republican views, but as a Republican, I denounce this. And I've done that in several other instances, especially regard to instances...
I'm saying you have. Yes, you have.
Oh, yeah, the Jeremiah Wright ad that came out in North Carolina, I'm sure that the NCGOP hates me bringing this up again, but when they decided to run that ad against the wishes of Senator McCain, I was one of the few Republicans that stood up, well, African-American Republicans that stood up against the party and said, look, not only is this wrong, but you are continuing a history of playing off of racial overtones to try to win an election. And we need to change this as a party, and I'm not going to support this. And I went to the tip top of the party and went all the way down with that complaint and making that stance and organized against that stance. And that's where what people don't see or appreciate about Black Republicanism is the fact that in order to make progress, you need people to A, stand true to their values, and B, take a stand when they see the party or the institution they belong to doing things incorrectly. That's the only way you get progress.
Let me open the phones here. As we talked to Lynn McAllister, who writes for Root, AO Black Voices, Hip Hop Republican, political contributor for the Fox Charlotte Morning Show, Fox News Rising, 410-319-8888. Let us go to Halim in Towson. You're on the air. Halim, welcome.
Yes. How y'all doing?
Welcome. We're doing well.
Good afternoon.
Well, you know, I'm an African-American, and I do adhere to some conservative values, and I do believe that, you know, ownership and, you know, striving to hold yourself up and building your own economy and things of that nature is to the benefit of African-Americans. My difficulty with African Americans in the Republican Party is the fact that, from my vantage point, what I'm looking at, I don't see leadership with real backbone. To me, it seems like they just kowtow to the leadership, the far right. You know, they don't have any independent voice within the party. And, you know, I've been thinking about moving in that direction, but I just can't. It's, you know, until I hear and see some independent voices, individuals who have some backbone and strength, you know, I just can't move that way.
Sir, let me respond to
Please
that, if
ahead,
I may.
Man.
You'll see. I mean, the bottom line is there are some people that have to follow and some people that have to lead. I've been a leader since I can remember. My dad told me when I was 6 years old that I was a leader. I was meant to be a leader, and I always will be a leader. That's why I am staying with the party that I believe in. And I have my shovel digging those ditches so that one day when when we got those tracks laid down, you can get on that train and ride on board to where you believe you should be as far as a political affiliation.
Halim, thanks so much for your call. Let's try to get another caller in here before we have to meet the great-great-great-grandson of the original Black Republican, Frederick Douglass, 410-319-8888, and Robert on Route 83. You're on the air.
Hi. First of all, I call to congratulate the young man, because hit the keynote, be relevant. And my second point is, when you finish with the Republican Party, could you help the Democratic Party, too? Because I think leadership for both groups have lost touch and relevance. And while I struggle with some of the things, and I'm not that young, that I've seen the Republicans do, which basically amount to attack on the American people, as well as an attack on civilization in general, they miss a lot of key opportunities, just like the Democrats. I am glad to hear a young man who understands that relevance is more important than the party line. Truth and conviction and the guts to follow that conviction are more important than having a flag on your lapel. But if I have two sons now, but if you were my son, I'd be beating on my chest. Keep up with this work. But come back to the Democrats when you finish.
Well, Robert, I appreciate that. First and foremost, we're children of God, as far as I'm concerned. Then from there, we're Americans, and then after that, we are affiliated with a political party. And so, it to me, if I can help do what I do within the Republican Party and help us be a better party, it will, through strong, genuine, true competition, and not through the mudslinging that we've seen in politics for forever, we can strengthen this country through sound, great political leadership. And that's one of the goals I'm trying to do, just from the right-wing point of view.
It's interesting. We'll see what if Barack Obama wins this election, and it seems to be in that direction at the moment. It may change the nature of the Democratic Party. Some of the things that he's saying, we're here in Baltimore. We see a man who's a Democrat who's head of our school system, who's Cuban-American, who's decentralizing the schools, which was a Republican issue, but maybe no longer. Do you know what I'm saying? I think things are shifting. So I don't know how people are going to affiliate in the future. I think that we're going to see a major shift in America in the next 4 years.
I agree. And the thing that I said earlier, Senator Obama is breaking a glass ceiling that benefits Black America, America, Democrats, and Black Republicans, because now it's showing that, hey, the Republican Party, if you want to be relevant in the 21st century, these are the new rules to the game. You can't come out here with racial ads and think that that's just going to win you a national election. And it has won national elections for them previously. It doesn't seem as though it's going to work this time, so they have to change the rules of the game. And then on top of that, it will allow Black Americans to be more inclusive with their vote throughout every level of government. Hopefully this will be a trickle-down effect where we see more conservative and liberal truism when it comes to how we vote at every level of government, not just the federal level, but the state and local levels as well.
Conservative doesn't mean racist, but we'll see if people like you, who are thoughtful, can actually remain in the party with people like Sarah Palin down the road. We'll find all that out. And Lenny, it's really been a pleasure to have you on the air, and I hope that as we talk about politics in America, we can count on you to join us for a full hour with other guests to talk about the future of our country.
I'd love to do that. Thank you for having me on this afternoon.
It's been a pleasure to meet you. Good to have you with us.
Likewise, you have a good afternoon.
Thanks so much. Lenny McAllister has been with us here for the first part of our program. When we come back, we'll introduce you to Kenneth Morris, president of the Frederick Douglass Family Foundation, the great-great-grandson of both Booker T. Washington and Frederick Douglass, and Marva Benz, who's executive director of the Frederick Douglass Family Foundation. Find out what they're talking about and why they're in Baltimore. We'll be right back, so stay with us.
Support for WEAA is provided by
APG Federal Credit Union, building strong families for a stronger community. At APG FCU, customers are called members as they enjoy the power of the cooperative and ownership of the credit union. The board of directors is made up entirely of volunteers from the local community elected by the members. That's the credit union difference. Discover it at APG FCU, your community credit union.
And the generous support of members like you. Thank you.
Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and I'm now talking to two men in Baltimore, and they're on a whirlwind tour we're going to talk about here. Kenneth Morris is president of the Frederick Douglass Family Foundation. He's currently touring schools around the country to teach students about modern-day slavery. And if I understand right, he's going to schools that are named after Booker T. Washington and Frederick Douglass.
That's correct.
And he's also the great-great-grandson of both Booker T. Washington and Frederick Douglass. And Robert Benz is in the studio with us as well, who is the executive director of the Frederick Douglass Family Foundation. The number here is 410-319-8888. Join us with your comments for these gentlemen for this portion of our show. And welcome. Good to have you both with us.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So tell us first, Kenneth Morris, about this whirlwind tour that you were on to schools, Booker T. Washington, which in Baltimore would be a middle school, and Frederick Douglass High School, one of the great old historically African-American high schools in the country here in Baltimore.
That's right. In fact, we were there at Frederick Douglass High School this morning and Booker T. Washington Middle School this afternoon. But the tour is a 30-school tour, and we're going to reach more than 30,000 students with a message of the legacy of Frederick Douglass and the legacy of Booker T. Washington. And we also talk about modern-day slavery and raising awareness about modern-day slavery, because not many people know that slavery didn't end with the signing of the Emancipation Proclamation, and that slavery exists in many forms all over the world, including in this country.
And it existed in this country, clearly, for black folks, up into the 1940s.
No question.
The re-enslavement and the all kinds of weird ways that happened here. But to talk a bit about what this movement you have that's starting around the issue of slavery around the world, and what you and Robert Benz are doing with the Frederick Douglass Family Foundation.
Well, Frederick Douglass probably was one of the most important abolitionists of the 19th century. And the Frederick Douglass Family Foundation, we started a little over a year ago, and we started it with the idea that we would continue the legacy and perpetuate the legacy of Frederick Douglass and also of Booker T. Washington. But when we started to think what would this organization be about, we knew that it was a given that it would be about history. But having the name Frederick Douglass on it, he was an American visionary, and we knew that anything that we did would have to be about the future and would have to be about helping people. Now, being an abolitionist, his goal was to end slavery. Mm-hmm. Slavery still exists, so his blood runs through my veins, and I guess you could say that I'm a modern-day abolitionist. Now, the foundation, our mission is twofold. Number one, to raise awareness, which I've said, the legacy of Frederick Douglass, but also to raise awareness about the enduring crisis of modern-day slavery. And that's what this tour is about. That's what this 30-day, 30,000 student tour is about.
30,000 student tour is amazing. And Robert Benz, what's your role in all this?
I'm the executive vice president. Kenny and I and Kenny's mother started this organization together last year. And I guess my role in this is, a few years ago, I read an article in National Geographic called 21st Century Slavery. I read that, and I knew this was something that I couldn't look at and walk away from. I think there are those moments in everyone's life where they see something that they just can't walk away from. And that was one of those things. And Kenny and I had spoken for a long time about taking a different turn in our careers. So we've been in the tour and travel business for a long time together, for about 20 years. And I came to him and I said, you know, this is something that we should really look at. You have a great platform with your incredible bloodline, and it would be a great premise from which to start the idea of talking to people about modern-day slavery and human trafficking.
Now, before we talk a bit about that, I have to ask this question, which we get asked all the time, Kenneth Morris. So tell me about how you are descended from both Booker T. Washington and Frederick Douglass, two of the great icons of American history.
Right.
How that crossed paths.
Well, how they collided.
You know? How they collide through you is what I want to know.
You know, that's a question that I get all the time, and people always ask me, well, how can you be related to Frederick Douglass and Booker T. Washington when they weren't related to each other? Now, it happened through marriage.
I'm sure that was the case, right?
Yes, and it happened on my mother's side of the family. My grandfather was Frederick Douglass III, Frederick Douglass's great-grandson. My grandmother was Booker T. Washington's granddaughter. Now, they met in Tuskegee, Alabama at Tuskegee Institute, it's now Tuskegee University,
right.
In 1941. They were literally walking across campus, bumped into each other. They didn't know that the other descended from an historic family. And it was love at first sight. And they wound up getting married 3 months after that meeting. And that's how the two families came together.
That's really interesting. Just curious. You have to ask the question.
And then they had one daughter, and that was my mother, Nettie Washington Douglas. She was an only child. She married my father, Kenneth Morris Sr. When I was born, I was the first male to unite the bloodlines of the families.
Gotcha. All right. Just have to get the lineage straight.
You have to ask that. You have to check that out.
Despite that incredible lineage, Kenny now has to make a name for himself,
yes,
because he was named after his father, Kenneth Morris Sr., which is not bad, but he's now got to start from scratch.
So talk about the movement, I mean, to end slavery in the world. I mean, I think that's... Before we have to take another break here, I mean, I think that it's really an important subject. People don't realize the extent of modern slavery in this world.
Right.
That even comes to these shores as well. I mean, I've interviewed people in this country where, especially around women being enslaved in this country, being brought to this country as prostitutes for many other reasons to work in people's homes, and literally it's slavery. So,
well, it's a problem that affects every race. It affects mostly women and children. 80% of the victims of modern-day slavery and human trafficking are women. 50% are children. And the common denominator seems to be an economic one. Poverty is the biggest issue with regard to modern-day slavery and human trafficking. Does it exist in the United States? Not as much as it does in other countries, but it does exist here. And it exists in the form, quite often, of young girls being involved in prostitution or being pulled into prostitution. But for the most part, it exists in countries like Southeast Asia and Thailand, Cambodia, Burma. It exists in Africa in the form of child soldiers. It exists in India with children making bricks.
So are you trying to make the public aware, or are you actively involved in intervening in the lives of people who are enslaved?
Where our mission is to raise awareness and make the public aware, because really the key to ending it in our lifetime is awareness. Now, you know, we've all heard of drug trafficking and we've heard of arms trafficking, but a lot of people would be surprised to know that human trafficking recently surpassed arms trafficking as the number two illicit activity in the world, and experts predict that in the very near future it will surpass drug trafficking. And the reason for that is because it's so profitable. When you sell the drugs are consumed and they're gone. When you sell the arms and they're trafficked into criminal enterprises, they're gone. But when you've got a person, when you've got a little girl that can service a man 15, 16, 17 times a day, the profits can be as high as 800%. So it's something that the drug cartels have gotten into because of the profits. So the idea is to raise awareness. There are laws in every single country around the world. The challenge of the 19th century abolitionists was to get the laws on the books.
Right.
The challenge of today's abolitionists or modern-day abolitionists is to get those laws enacted. So that's our idea, is to raise awareness so that people know about it and then they can rise up and fight it.
So where do you take this next? Where's your next city? Where do you go to next?
The next city is we've got a couple of schools. Let's see, we've got a school tomorrow in Baltimore.
Upper Marlboro. And it's a Frederick Douglass High School.
And then we head down to Silver Springs and then to Washington, D.C., Atlanta, Alabama. And then the idea of this tour, the October tour, Frederick Douglass Dialogues, is to put together and perfect a model that we can take out, hopefully get some financing, get some funding, whether it's through the government or through private enterprise, so we can do this on a wider scope, national basis.
Gentlemen, it's been a pleasure to meet you, and I will link all this stuff from a website to your work.
May we mention the website?
You may. I wish you would, please.
It's www.fdff, that's the acronym for Frederick Douglass Family Foundation, .org, fdff.org. And your listeners can go there and they can get a lot of information on the Frederick Douglass Dialogues, get some information on the Frederick Douglass and Booker T. Washington, and look into what we're doing.
And if you go to steinershow.com, we'll have all that up there for you, along with a podcast of this, so you can listen to it again and also link to this work that both Kenneth Morris and Robert Benz are doing with the Frederick Douglass Family Foundation, Kenneth Morris being the great-great-grandson of both Booker T. Washington and Frederick Douglass, president of that foundation, and Robert Benz, executive director of the Frederick Douglass Family Foundation. Thank you both so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mark.
It's a pleasure being here.
We come back, we'll be talking with Frank Schaefer, who is one of the founders of the religious right, but is no longer there, and has written columns like I Am Pro-Life and Pro-Obama, and has now written some very interesting stuff that's gotten a lot of hits in papers around the country about John McCain. Stay with us. We'll be right back with Frank Schaefer.
Support for WEAA is provided by Street Soldiers National Consortium and Safe Healing Foundation presenting the National Live and Free Conference Friday and Saturday, October 17th through the 18th at 8:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Lake Clifton Campus in Baltimore. The conference offers workshops on youth violence prevention and teaches youth how to stay alive and free. Guest speakers include Dr. Joseph Marshall, Terry J. Vaughn of The Steve Harvey Show, Mayor Dixon, and others. For information and registration, 410-685-7664. That's 410-685-7664.
And the generous support of members like you. Thank you.
What is an MBA? What are the benefits of having one? Is it too late to take the GMAT? If you have the questions about acquiring a Master's in Business Administration, Morgan State University has the answers. On Wednesday, October 15th at 6 p.m., the Earl G. Gray School of Business is holding an open house at the New University Student Center. This is a great opportunity to meet MBA administrators, students, and professors. For more information, 443-885-3396. That's 443-885-3396.
Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. We're going to talk in a few minutes here to Frank Schaefer, who is a best-selling author of several books, most recently being Crazy for God, How I Grew Up as One of the Elect and Helped Found the Religious Right and Lived to Take It All or Almost All of It Back. And he has written a really interesting column that was in the Baltimore Sun yesterday about John McCain, which is where we kind of noticed what he was saying, and then started reading his other work on the Huffington Post. He is a man who was there at the very beginning when the religious right was founded and has grown from that capacity into a new world of thought. So he'll be, is he here now? Do we have him? He's not here. Well, let me tell you this. Until he gets here, and we're waiting for him to arrive, join me here at 410-319-8888. 410-319-8888, or write to me here at steinershow@gmail.com. And let's take our own bend in the road here and talk about some things together. You heard earlier we had Lenny McAllister on, a black Republican. You can bring me your thoughts on that and where you think that fits into the scheme of things today. But I'm really interested in what's been going on lately in the news, what's been going on lately in terms of the speeches we've seen Sarah Palin give, drumming up these crowds. And I just have to tell you that as I watch TV and watch what was going on here, I have just been absolutely flabbergasted and shocked and amazed at what I've seen in the crowds that Sarah Palin has been haranguing. And it is one thing to oppose and have your opposed candidates and have your positions out there. Being a conservative does not mean you're a racist, does not mean that you are somebody who is a prehistoric human being. But what she's been doing with these crowds, saying Barack Hussein Obama, and putting his name out there in that way, what she has been saying about his being a consorting with terrorists, plural, whipping up crowds, and the crowds that seem to be being whipped up just really remind me of scenes that I've been really aware of with lynch mobs, watching what was known as Kristallnacht in Germany, when crowds of Nazis went in to beat and kill Jews. These are the same faces in the crowd screaming terrorist, off with his head, using the N-word in those crowds. And you see a shift in America maybe taking place. One of our guests tomorrow is going to talk about how he thinks that race in America will not be the trump card, that the economy will. And we'll see and who says that the economy will take over from race and that Barack Obama is going to win. What do you think? 410-319-8888. 410-319-8888. Or write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. So we can get your thoughts on all that. I think that, you know, to me, it is enraging. It is something that that we should really kind of stand up and oppose. We need to stand, and I would like to see John McCain stand up. I hope tomorrow night in this debate someone asks him that question directly. Does he accept what Sarah Palin's doing? Does he accept the way she harangues these crowds? Does he accept what the crowds are saying in response? Why he hasn't and she has not, why they have not stood up to the people in their audiences to say not just that you're wrong, but it's unacceptable. That race baiting in America is unacceptable. That allowing people in who support you to talk about killing Barack Obama is unacceptable. 410-319-8888. 410-319-8888. And get your thoughts on that and other issues facing us today. I mean, I think that today it's really interesting. You see conservatives who are kind of running for the hills. Charles Buckley, one of the leading conservative thinkers in America today, was left, but then was forced to leave the National Review, one of the leading conservative newspapers in the country. He's the author and the son of the late conservative thinker, William F. Buckley. And he wrote a piece on a blog that said he now supports Barack Obama. And he was, you heard the word fatwa. Well, he's been fatwaed by many people in the conservative movement and vilified and been asked to leave and resign the National Review. And it looks like people leaving a sinking ship and moving over to Obama. Could that be the case? Is that really happening? 410-319-8888. We'll come to your calls right here, coming in now, or write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. 410-319-8888 to join us here on the air with your thoughts about that and where this election is going and where you think it might take us. I really think some people have said to me and think that, and I do think, that this election is about fighting for the soul of America. It's about who we can become as a people. It's about who and where we are going to go as a nation. You know, I think that years back when people, those of us in the civil rights movement, were fighting to end segregation, that fight started destroying the mythology of America, the kind of Norman Rockwell image of George Washington chopping down the cherry tree, that we were we were this great nation of freedom and democracy, all the while kind of sweeping racism and sweeping segregation and before that slavery under the rug and trying not to see it. But then it was seen, and the Vietnam War happened, and poverty was seen by America, how deep it was in this country, and the mythology was broken. And we've never replaced that mythology with anything else. And that's what this is about in many ways. I think that, you know, when I was at the Democratic Convention and I saw Michelle Obama speaking, one of the things that struck me watching that was that in 1964, I was in Atlantic City at the Democratic Convention with the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party and Fannie Lou Hamer, the sharecropper from Mississippi who led the movement in Mississippi. And we tried to break down the doors there to force the Mississippi delegation to become an interracial delegation. We didn't win that, but Fannie Lou Hamer spoke. And her speech was just so powerfully moving about the oppression of black folks in the South and of black women in the South and being a sharecropper. And then I was watching Michelle Obama 44 years later on this stage and realizing that an African-American woman could become the First Lady of America. It's an amazing time. What are your thoughts? 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. James, on your cell, you're on the air.
Yeah, Mark, how you doing today?
Well, James, good to hear from you.
Doing well. Listen, let me say the racial part is always boiling just below the surface. Secondly, I'm personally offended by the fact that McCain would put Palin on the ticket with him. Clearly, this woman is not qualified to do much of anything. And with respect to McCain putting down racial animosity when he's talking to these people, this guy's a softie. He's the same guy back in 2000, came out against the Confederate flag, and then when he got some heat, he changed his position on that. Again, during the primary campaign, I think it was in South Carolina, this white woman stood up referring to Mrs. Clinton. You know, how do we beat the bitch? And he never responded to that.
Mm-hmm.
And to be quite frank with you, he should have started responding about this racial thing of painting Barack as a terrorist, as an Arab, and all. He should have been dealing with that a long time ago. You got a lot of, quite frankly, airheads out there in America who have still got this racial kind of tinge, if you will, and we're trying to get away from that. You know, I applaud Barack for the campaign that he's run. You know, this guy hasn't gotten down in the gutter and tried to throw a bunch of mud and what have you. So, you know, everybody in America who has a position or at least claim that they're a leader, you have to stand up and deplore this kind of rhetoric and this kind of conduct. We can't tolerate it anymore. You know, like you say, it is an amazing time. We should move away from that and try to bring the country together and be productive and be an example for everybody around the world. You know, that's my position.
Well, you know, we have to remember that John McCain, he became senator from Arizona right after Barry Goldwater was senator, that John McCain fought against Martin Luther King's holiday becoming a national holiday.
Yeah, you're right. Absolutely.
You know.
You're absolutely right, Mark. You're right. And I remember that.
Yeah, so we cannot forget what he really represents. And I think, I don't think John McCain is a racist, but no, I think that John McCain, and maybe people disagree, if you disagree with that, join me at 410-319-8888. Maybe he is a racist in your mind. You can bring that to the airwaves. But I don't think that he is. I think that he's somebody who has kind of arcane ancient views. But I think that if he's really the man he says he is, he needs to stand up and say no to what's going on from his supporters. James, I'm glad you joined us. 410-319-8888. What are your thoughts on this race and where it might be taking us? And let me remind you, by the way, that you can join us tomorrow night at the Charles Theater for the debate. Tomorrow night, the owner of the Charles Theater has opened up one of his theaters so that people can come in for free and to see the debate. We're going to be there, and it should be really a very interesting evening. We're going to join all many people in Baltimore coming out to watch the debates together on the big screen with a good sound system. So 410-319-8888, if you can make that will be great. We'd love to see you there, and also like to hear from you about things you'd like to see us do here on the show. And let us go to the phones at 410-319-8888. And AK in Baltimore, you're on the air.
How you doing?
Hi, I'm well. How are you?
Oppressed but blessed. Yeah, Mark also mentioned on McCain, he was totally against Nelson Mandela. Ella's freedom. Have a good one.
That's right. He was.
Also mentioned on McCain. He was.
You're absolutely right. He was. I mean, he opposed that as well. And I think that people need to understand that. I think even more frightening to me is what Sarah Palin kind of represents. I mean, when she was on the city council, when she became mayor of Wasilla, she attempted to put someone on the city council to fill a vacancy who was both a member of the Alaska Independence Party and the John Birch Society. 410-319-8888. Nikki in Baltimore, you're on the air. Hi, Nikki, there?
Hi, it's Hi. Teresa.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. I was calling to talk about broadly what you were talking about, but more about racism in general and education. I live in Randallstown. I grew up in Annapolis. We had busing. Now the schools are segregated by choice. People are moving into, you know, people live with it who they want to live. But now the schools, like in Randallstown, the school my son would go to is Newtown High, and it's the percentage of African-American children to Caucasian-Americans is like 100 to 1. There's like 30 white kids at the whole school. And whatever happened to, you know, schools, mixed schools? And then my sister showed me a report on the Annapolis schools, and because the schools are going to, you know, self-segregation or whatever.
Right.
Like, some of the schools are 97% white, Caucasian or whatever, and their test scores are much higher than the other schools, like Parole Elementary or Tyler Heights or Georgetown East, schools that I went to, where the test scores are much, much lower.
Well, I mean, we do segregate ourselves in America, you know. I mean, on the one hand, I think people have a right to associate with whom they want to associate with, A. But B, I'm an old-fashioned integrationist. I'm an old-fashioned person in the sense that I want to see us come together, really as a society, in a very different way. And I would do away with the boundaries between city and county when it comes to schools and let kids go to school wherever they want.
Right. It would be great to be able to send your kid to a school, to your neighborhood school.
Right.
I went to Annapolis schools. It was like 50-50. And you know what? I got to know a lot of different people, and I got to know how to get along. You know what I mean? And my children are not having that same sort of experience, because I don't want to send my child to a school where they're going to be a minority student, because I don't think they would feel comfortable. So, and the other thing that this is about, No Child Left Behind.
Right.
They get money. The test scores go to the schools with the highest scores. That doesn't make any sense.
It's also counterintuitive and ridiculous. I mean,
right.
No Child Left Behind is an unfunded mandate, that the only reason it can work in some places is because people fund it. But my great hope, actually, and I thank you for your call, my great hope is in this city, is Andres Alonso in the city school system. My prediction is that Baltimore City is going to end up having one of the best school systems in the entire nation within the next 10 years. And Nikki in Baltimore at 410-319-8888. You're on the air. This is Nikki, right?
Yes, it is.
Good. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I just want to go back to the statement that you made earlier as far as McCain not being racist. I want to agree with you. I don't believe that he's racist. I just believe that he's an older gentleman, and he has older views, and I don't think that he can understand where we are right now. So racist comments and things like that, I don't believe that he even hears it or even, you know, think that it's an issue, because that's probably something that he's used to from back in his day.
That's probably true, Nikki. But I was also thinking, I have dear friends who are older in this community and who are white people. Dear friends like Clinton and Catherine Bamberger, who are dear old friends, and who's a former head of the law school at GW, a Catholic U. Uh-huh. And I mean, he's deeply involved in the world that we live in, and so it's more than age. It's age, and I think isolation from the rest of the world, you know. And I think that it may be time for a new day in America, and I think many of us are hoping that it is, and we'll see if it is. Are we saying our guest is here? Let me introduce you all to Frank Schaefer. Frank, welcome. Good to have you on the show.
I was supposed to be on earlier, and I had a massive screw-up here in Massachusetts. Too long a story, but I'm very, very sorry.
Frank, I'll tell you what. We will get you back another time for a much longer time. How's that?
Yeah, please do, anytime. And you know what? Next time, I'll make sure it happens.
I'll tell you what. You know, when you're on the air, for as long as I've been, when you lose a guest, you learn how to vamp for a while.
Yeah, that's good. Well, you know, usually I wouldn't be making excuses, but this time it really wasn't my fault. I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. Frank Schaefer writes for the Huffington Post. He's the author of a number of books, Crazy for God, How I Grew Up as One of the Elected, Helped Found the Religious Right, and Lived to Take It All or Almost All of It Back. He's written a book that I really appreciated called Keeping Faith, a Father-Son Story About Love and the United States Marine Corps, and AWOL, the Unexcused Absence of America's Upper Classes from Military Service. Now it hurts our country. He's written a number of movies. He has written some interesting pieces that I was really focused on, which was I'm Pro-Life and Pro-Obama, that he did last February, and a piece that he had in the Sun Papers, which got a lot of hits, which was a letter to John McCain. And I'm really very interested in kind of your sojourn here. I mean, you it's I've interviewed over the years a lot of evangelical thinkers,
right.
and I learned a long time ago that evangelicals are not a group that you can just paint with a broad brush and go, oh, they all think the
right,
same.
Right. Well, you know, for people who have read Crazy for God, the book that you mentioned, you know, the subtitle really sums it up, and that is, you know, how I grew up as one of the elect, helped found the religious right, and lived to take all or all of it back. You know, I'm in the stage of my life now, you know, as 56 years old, three kids, three grandchildren, where you look back and you realize there's some things that you were just plain wrong about or were ignorant of. And one of them is this kind of absolutist idea that, you know, growing up in an evangelical fundamentalist household, that we had the answer and everybody else was
right.
kind of wrong. And so, you know, if you'd gone back to the 70s or 80s, you know, my father, Francis Schaeffer, was kind of evangelical royalty, you know, hanging out with the Bushes and the Reagans and the Ford family and all the rest of it, as I talk about in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And I've really gone from there to a place where I don't consider myself to be a liberal Democrat, because I'm not. In fact, I'm registered as an independent voter, but I kind of try to call things as I see it. So, you know, my own life is divided into writing my fiction, books like Portofino and now Crazy for God, which is a memoir. And then when I do things on the HuffPost or other newspapers, one day someone might read it and say, wow, this guy's from the right, and another day they might say he's from the left. And that's not because I'm all over the map. It's just because I just don't see things only in ideological terms.
Let me probe something with you. I want to open the phones so the listeners kind of talk to you a bit, and because I think the ideas you have are fascinating. I was saying to my producer, Jessica Phillips, this morning as we were talking about your work, and I've only recently become aware of it, and I've been reading a lot in the Huffington Post that let me explore the other things you've done.
Right.
That the idea of being the piece you wrote last February, let me start there and then quickly go to McCain.
Sure.
The piece you wrote last February was, I'm pro-life and pro-Obama.
Right.
And I think that's the question of abortion in America is a huge one.
That's right.
I mean, I often think of myself as anti-abortion but pro-choice.
Well, I'm anti-abortion and I would consider myself pro-life, but the fact of the matter is, I think all of us at a certain point make a decision in life. Are we interested in ideological purity? Or are we actually interested in the substance of what we're talking about? And the example I would give is this. Look, the Republicans have been talking about abortion for 30 years. They haven't changed anything. They've cut social programs and family programs that have actually created a climate that is pretty hostile to families. You know, we're one of the only countries in the world, for instance, that doesn't have any kind of paternity leave or maternity leave built into the legal structure. You know, we don't have good child care programs. Our educational system is sliding. Aid to dependent mothers has been cut. You know, the fact of the matter is, if you want less abortions, you have to do something for families, for mothers, for children. You can't just say, oh, we're against abortion, we're against abortion, we're against abortion. Vote for me, then get into office like George Bush did and do literally zip for the people who are most at risk of having a hard time raising a family. So, you know, I'm very pro-Obama because I think he'll be a great president, but I'm also pro-Obama because, weirdly enough, even though he's pro-choice in terms of political theology, if you want to put it that way, I think looking at his programs in the cold, hard light of day, there are going to be less abortions. And I think if McCain and Palin get elected and we get more of this Republican economic downturn and chaos we're suffering, it's going to lead to more people being in a really tough position. There'll be more abortions. So I just have to say, you know, do we want ideological, theological purity, or do you actually want less abortions? And in my case, I don't consider I've changed my pro-life views at all. What I consider is that I've basically seen the light of day and realized that propaganda and grandstanding on moral issues isn't the same thing as actually doing anything about it.
And very quickly, I do want to get some callers in here who've been waiting since to come into this, is that I want to know, for our listeners, what you think about the politics of the last week,
well,
the crowds around
horrendous.
Sarah Palin and John McCain.
I'll just put it really bluntly. I think McCain lost the election when he nominated Palin because it showed he was basically irresponsible and erratic, which I know people have been saying, but in this case it's true. Let me say, in 2000, I worked for John McCain to get him elected instead of George W. Bush. I was on all kinds of radio stations, evangelical and other words, Ollie North, all sorts of conservative talk radio, pushing his agenda, saying he'd make a better president than George W. Bush, and I think back then he would have, but I think something's happened, and he's bought into this agenda where you have to mollify or pacify the evangelical right wing, and as a result, he nominated Palin, and, you know, this is a woman who is associated with the secessionist movement in Alaska, so So I think it's kind of ironic that we'd have somebody, potentially a heartbeat from the presidency, who wants to break up the United States as a union. It's a very weird idea. And, you know, this is the far right, the fringe of the fringe. And then her denomination, the Assemblies of God, you know, even in evangelical circles, most evangelicals would look at that as very, very, very extreme and fringe. And so, you know, it's a very odd choice. And then you get into this business where she's going around saying Obama's not one of us, he's not really American,
right,
he's
right.
Dealing around with terrorists. And I wrote this piece for The Sun saying, look, this is just stirring up hatred of an ignorant mob. We're a country with a history of assassinations. This is grossly, grossly irresponsible. And essentially, I wrote an open letter to McCain and just say, hey, you know, you've changed.
Maybe I get a caller or two in here before we have to leave for the hour. And let's go to who's been holding on for a long time. Thomas in Pasadena have been holding on for a long, long time. Go ahead.
You know, Mark, first of all, let me say that it's a pleasure to talk to you. I listened to one of the comments that you made that this election, with reference to Obama, is really one that seems to have a central point. For the first time in my life, I agree with you that this seems to be for the hearts and the minds of this country. I really honestly feel that this is the greatest country in the world, but we have a long ways to go in terms of being able to understand people. We don't seem to, I guess, want to treat people as equals. And I'm not necessarily talking about any particular group of people. I'm just saying the attitude that we have in reference to people in general. I mean, it's really very pitiful and sad.
Right.
Well, frankly, we only have a couple minutes left. I wish you kind of talk a minute and 40 seconds left. If you could talk a bit about...
Yeah, I mean, I wrote a piece for the Huffington Post a while back saying, look, if Barack Obama had been a white candidate with the economic situation we're in, two wars that are, one is being lost in Afghanistan currently, the Iraq war, we never should have been there, he'd be ahead by 20, 25 points. I mean, look, you know, we have a racist underbelly in this country, which I talked about in terms of Palin trying to stir things up. It's grossly irresponsible. This is a country that has history of violence against black people and discrimination. And so, sure, talk about the issues, say that you disagree, but avoid that. You know, people who read my book, Crazy for God, will find out that the reason I did leave the evangelical right is because I found them so grossly intolerant. Fundamentally, the right wing in this country has become anti-American. And in Palin, you really see that because her husband... And she's for 3 years has been going to this secessionist movement in Alaska, giving them
right.
greetings and talking to them. Look,
but,
how can you have a vice president who has anything to do with a secessionist movement in a state that wants to break up the union? I mean, this is insane. So the right wing has literally gone crazy in this country, and McCain, I think, has really let us down. I mean, he says he's putting his country first. How on earth can he nominate someone this fringe?
Frank Schaefer, it's been a pleasure to talk to you. We really look forward to having you back on.
Profuse apologies.
No, it's okay, and I thank you so much for all the writing you're doing.
I'll do it any time, and next time I will be on.
That's all right.
And not screw up.
It was great to have you on with us. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot.
Take care. We'll let you all know the WEA is in need of volunteers for our upcoming fall membership drive, October 18th through October 26th, so have some fun with us. For an hour or two, volunteer for this show or any other program on WEAA. We're going to have a great time, raise a lot of money for your favorite public radio station. Call Norvell Jackson in our membership department at 443-885-2075. 443-885-2075. Be part of WEAA. The Mark Steiner Show is produced by Justin Levy and Jessica Phillips. We're directed and engineered this hour by Zachary Coleman. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again or to podcast any of our past shows, visit us on the web at steinershow.org.